she's asking about how you know if someone will be faithful to you or not. She's dating a guy who's been married 4 times before. Is he safe?
Welcome to Life, Love, and Family.
Life has been shattered, and you feel maybe in the depths of despair. You feel like, I'll never trust again. And maybe you're wondering, what do I even do with this marriage? Something is going on with my spouse. Something's not right. He's guilty about something. What's going on here? She's not sharing what she usually does. She seems distracted. Something's going on. As a counselor, I have come into a room where a person has said out loud, I'm having an affair. The room suddenly goes cold, and here I am. I'm the counselor in the room. Something has been said that's broken a heart. We all know somebody that has walked through this. And that's awkward as well. If we know them, even what to say or what to do, or if it's you, and maybe it was years ago, you're happily married now and there is trust, but you still have a sense of trauma and injury. In fact, the word affair kind of shudders you when you hear that word, because it's something that happened in the past. How do we get over that? How do we prevent affairs? How do we deal with situations that are so traumatic? That sense of betrayal is so deep, we feel like we can never, ever get over it. I'm Dr. Greg Jantz. This is Life, Love, and Family. Sam Kelly is in the studio, as she always is. Sam, it's a hard topic today.
It is. And it's one I've had some firsthand experience with. I know I was married before, and he had an affair with an intern at work. And it was. A lot of the things you're saying are very true. And in fact, what you just said, where you said that even though I'm married now and my husband is faithful and everything is fine, that word affair tweaks me. And I feel very sensitive about that stuff, and sometimes almost paranoid, which is, it's an awful feeling. Is that kind of normal? Does that happen when someone goes through it?
Yes, and thank you so much just for sharing that today, because it's really a form of post-traumatic stress. We can take something that's been so, like betrayal, so significant. And even though we may be really happy that's all over with, and I'm happy where I am now, but it still pricks a part of us that every time we hear that word or hear a name or the word affair comes up, it can touch a part of us that's still wounded. We want to talk today about how do we keep this from ever, ever happening. I know as a counselor the heartache, I know the pain, I know where this can go, places that we don't really want to go, because it, one word, it leads to regret.
You said there were warning signs that someone could look for.
We look for a pattern here. And these are things that we need to look at to safeguard our own hearts. But a warning sign can be unattended anger at your spouse. In other words, unresolved. Things are unresolved. And I'm just feeling it's been 6 months. It's been a year. Maybe it's been a lot longer. Just an underground anger. That anger could be resentments. That anger could be unresolved issues in the marriage that are not attended to. So we all use anger at times to justify behavior.
So you would probably say, if you realize, wow, I think I do have some of that, how do you start dealing with that so that it doesn't come out in some kind of acting out an affair or something like
if
that?
If I have underground anger and I'm not dealing with it, maybe I'm afraid if I really deal with this, I am going to get so angry. I'm going to say some things and my spouse will be out the door anyway.
Yeah.
Or I feel like it's never going to change. So why am I going to say anything about it? And I just bury it. But the anger's there. So at times, this is where we need maybe the help of good, wise counsel and counselor who can really help us deal with that underground anger that maybe it's become resentment and I've become embittered. Because that's a setup. It can set us up to do behaviors that we probably will regret.
And justify them.
And just, we go, she deserves this because, and we'll have a good rationale for it. Now, scriptures are real clear, and that's our foundation we're working from today, about marriage and this, how sacred this is. And when we say I do, when we make that commitment, there are boundaries. And we know that, you know, even one of the Ten Commandments, there's a boundary around adultery. We want, you know, going into this program, that's the reference point we're working from. Another one could be if you've gone a long time and you don't feel appreciated and there's not many kind words between you and your spouse and you feel really undervalued, that could be a setup. Because then somebody comes along and says, wow, you sure look pretty today. And you start craving that from a different source. So you need to ask yourself, am I craving the attention? Anybody in my life right now, besides my spouse, am I kind of craving the attention of that person?
Can I ask this too, that if you are in that position where you think, wow, I haven't heard words of encouragement, I could use a compliment and I haven't received one, how do you go about helping your spouse to do that or to make them a partner in that? Or is that just awkward? I mean, how could you go to someone and go, okay, it's time for you to tell me I look good?
You know, have you noticed me for a while?
Exactly.
Here's the danger.
Okay.
If we're feeling that, then we can do a lot of sarcasm or backhanded comments that make the probability of that happening even less.
Yeah.
So if you go, well, you never say anything nice, but didn't you notice what I was wearing? Or these jabs that you're saying, because really what's underneath those words is I'd like to have a little attention, but I'm angry because I'm not getting it.
Right.
Well, when you do that, you probably notice you get even less.
It backfires. How do you do it the right way?
Oh, you might say, sweetheart, you know, it really means a lot to me when you give me a compliment. Times where you've told me that I look nice, or you really like my face, or whatever. Be specific and say how you like it and how important that is and how much you value it. So make it known without putting a lot of undue pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it not a real big deal. If you sit down and we're going to talk and you never give me any compliments and you used to, that has the potential of backfiring as well.
Yeah, it seems so heavy and so loaded.
Yes.
Other warning signs.
Well, one we need to mention, and it's a difficult one, but if there's sexual or physical withdrawal or non-interest, or we don't have a sexual relationship and it's not addressed or not talked about, that could be a real setup. If you feel like probably a sense of rejection, we need to be careful about that. It can be a real tender area and it can feel like rejection, but be careful. We need to dig a little deeper to find out what's going on.
We got a note here. It's on pornography. Jim says that he struggled with that for a while, and he actually had that issue before he got married. And he says, now she's accusing me of adultery, even though it's just pornography. Is porn really adultery?
On a very practical level, if you're looking to get your needs met through pornography, then you're using somebody else who you've objectified in order to meet those sexual needs, and it's not your spouse. That is inappropriate. And if I'm using fantasy, and if I was with that person that I'm involved in pornography, that I would likely engage in sexual acts with them, you know, you keep crossing lines. And I'm going to have to say that engagement in pornography, it is leading you into an emotional adultery. And most, if they're engaged in pornography, will act out.
So if you're the wife and you are struggling with that in your marriage, how do you go and heal that? How do you be a part of healing in that?
Two things we need to be careful of. First is easy to go, okay, well, must be something with me. And you blame yourself. So careful about self-blame. And the next is, what is it in his life that is so out of order? Okay. Or where's he injured? Or why is he directing it that way? Because there's something underneath this. Now, there's such thing as just pure sexual temptation, but if a person has an ongoing relationship with pornography, what is underneath that's driving that? There are people that end up being a sexual addict, and they never intended for that to happen, but that's where it took them.
Because you're making it sound like, when we first read a letter like this, and you were talking earlier about sexual neglect in a marriage, and if maybe it's just not as intimate as you think it should be, you think, well, that's maybe an outlet for me, and that's okay. And then what you're describing, though, sounds almost like an alcoholism, gambling addiction, that it's an addiction.
it's secret, like an addiction. I'm overusing it. And I probably do have regret. And something about this really I know isn't right. And I'm avoiding dealing with things that I really need to if I'm engaging in it. An affair is an affair. It takes different forms, but it's what's going on in the mind. And we're talking today about warning signs. Sam Kelly's here to help me out with this.
I like the warning signs that you've told us about so far. I mean, so far as saying, if you realize you have this anger that hasn't been dealt with for your spouse and you're just holding that and it becomes bitterness over a long period of time, it makes you more likely to have an affair. If you feel unappreciated, you don't hear a lot of positive stuff from your spouse, you're more likely to act on that temptation. Or if there's some just sexual neglect in your marriage where it's just not happening and you don't know what to do with that, you're also more at risk. What else? What are some other warning signs?
Another warning sign can be what I call justifying behavior. Let me describe this one. You're in a relationship. The word platonic is sometimes used. I'm in a platonic relationship. It's harmless. But what type of relationship is it really? Are you calling somebody a friend that, you know, you're just a few steps away from crossing a line? Do you have anybody in your life right now that if you pause and thought about it, that could really begin to skate on thin ice? Do I have somebody in my life that if I just allowed it, I could get out there on some really thin ice? So a lot of times we'll justify, oh, just a friend at work.
Right.
And we begin to relabel relationships as, oh, it's platonic, it's a friend, but it's really something else.
On Life, Love, and Family today, we're talking about how to recognize and avoid sexually charged relationships. It happens in today's culture. And if you want to make your marriage affair-proof, we can help. We've got a phone number to the Center of Place of Hope. It's 888-771-5166.
If there is other addictions, and this is one of the warning signs, so other addictive behavior in your life that sometimes can go alongside of affairs, gambling, free-flowing alcohol. And you step into this, the excitement of all the gambling, and there's kind of a sexualized culture with that. So am I allowing other addictive behaviors in my life that really are not that healthy, either the behavior or the environment?
Do you find that people try to seek that stuff out sometimes as a way to build identity?
Sure. I'm just going to go out and go gambling to have some fun. Well, really? Is this really taking you to a place that's going to be healthy for you? Am I allowing addictions in my life that will weaken me? Even food addiction. Do I have addictive behaviors in my life?
And we know it. As you start examining yourself, you go, yeah, I kind of know it. It's just hard to admit it. We have a note from Lee, and she's asking about how you know if someone will be faithful to you or not. She's dating a guy who's been married 4 times before. His last marriage was 5 years ago. He says he got over all the issues that caused those multiple marriages. He wants to be married. Is he safe? She said, how do you know?
Sometimes we don't know, but one of the things that we can do that could be really proactive is let's agree to go to counseling together and let's look at our histories. Let's look at things we're bringing into a relationship. How do we build intimacy? How's our communication? How do we build trust? So by looking at some of these other core values of a relationship that are really important, you may find that this is going to answer some questions for you. It's kind of like the woman that said, you know, well, I know he's been married 3 times. I get that, but I know I can trust him. Sometimes we got to take the blinders off.
Oh, it's hard. And what about the God piece in it, too? Because you do hear from Christian brothers and sisters, well, the Lord told me that this person would be a good person for me.
Pray about it together and let's bring other wise counsel into the picture. And you know what? God wants things for us that produce healthy fruit. And what's the fruit of the relationship? You know, my most recent book is really about relationship dependency. Am I in a relationship that there's an unhealthy dependency? And I'm saying, well, God brought this person to me.
Yeah.
Well, let's look closely.
Yeah. And we will mention the title of that book. It's called Don't Call It Love, a great resource. There are exercises in there. And it's just, if you're having a hard time saying, I can't even be honest with myself about how I'm feeling on this stuff, it helps to open things up. We love this book, Don't Call It Love. You can get a copy from our website at aplaceofhope.com.
As we also look at these warning signs, are you allowing yourself to seek out sexualized materials? What movies or even TV shows? What am I really allowing to tantalize me. So am I choosing some racy art movies and I'm saying it's just a movie, or I'm watching this for the story? You know, am I justifying allowing inappropriate sexual content to come in and entertain me in an unhealthy way? All right, I know we're just looking at every area today. Here's one that we need to talk about. Is there any person in your life that you have, and I'll use the term fixation, there's a person that you're just drawn to, could be at work, could be at church, could be in a small group, could be from afar, could even be a celebrity, but there's a person that you're fixated and you have too much interest. You're looking for them on the internet, you're trying to learn more about them, not just one time, but you're really over-engaged in this person, where I'm going to call it a fixation.
These are honest questions. If you've come up to the edge of it, you know how easy it is to get into that. And so there's no judgment here. This is just talking about real life and how in this world, those things come across your path. And maybe you've been the spouse of someone who's been challenged with that, or maybe you are that person. We've got help for you if you need it at the Center, A Place of Hope. Here's the phone number, 888-771-5166.
Let me add too. Now, we're using the term today, affair. But let's also talk about that you can have affairs with some things versus people. What's got your attention is sports, and it's got 110% of your attention and your spouse has none. You are putting all your thought life into that. Or it could be computer, or it could be something else, a hobby, where this is really where all your attention is. If you're a foodie, all you're doing is thinking about food all the time, at the expense of showing some attention and interest in your spouse. You're really crossing a line, because an affair is something that's consuming you in thought first.
That's pretty harsh.
Okay.
And amazing. Say I had an affair with a cheeseburger. That was bad.
Yes.
Wow. This is real stuff. What else? Like warning signs that if you're the spouse and you see your person starting to kind of do something from the outside, what would you notice?
In the book I wrote, Too Close to the Flame. How about that for a title? People have a tendency to get as close as they can, thinking they'll never get burned. I share a story of two people in the workplace that they were put on projects together where they had to spend a lot of time together. And that time together was really intense because they had deadlines. They had a boss that was pushing to get certain project done. And they were forced to really work after hours. Here's what happened. They're sitting around the conference table. It's after work hours. And they're really, as far as work-wise, they're a good team. They're doing a really great job. And they think that their boss is going to be really proud of this end product. She reaches over to him and gives him a little kind of a pat on the arm, kind of grabs his arm. And that night, he went home. He built a whole fantasy about that touch. Really, truly, it was a non-sexual touch. It was an innocent touch, but they had spent so much time together that that touch on the arm was interpreted to be something it wasn't. He actually drove to her house, knocked on the door, and, you know, with all the paperwork in his hands of the project, and said something like, I figured that you'd want me to come over and we'd work together on this. And at that point, she knew something was wrong.
Wow.
How much time am I spending together? And by that, I mean alone time.
Do you find this more and more as the workplace is more mixed with men and women working together in all different technologies and all different fields?
And I think it just opens up the possibility that things could happen. So we want to fortify ourselves. Because here's the thing. When these things happen, this one ended up ultimately in a sexual harassment complaint.
From the woman.
From the woman. You know, at some point he came to his senses, because he was not letting her go for a while. I mean, pursuing her. He had to seek some outside help and outside counseling. And he did. Came back full circle and not only apologized and sought forgiveness, but put some safeguards in his life so that wasn't going to happen again.
It's hard. You can put your own job in jeopardy, your family, everything. And yet, that's kind of what people do. We walk right up to the edge of it.
Most research tends to say that about 60% of affairs start at work. So we know over half at least.
Today on Life, Love, and Family, we're talking about strategies to keep your integrity and your moral commitment in today's permissive society. There is a book Dr. Greg Jance wrote. It's called Too Close to the Flame, great resource, and also some wise counsel in there. If you'd like to find out more or order your copy of the book, you can do that. Connect with us on our website at aplaceofhope.com. We've got a note here from Jean. It's about weight. She says she weighs about 100 pounds more than she did when she got married, and her husband is very accepting of that, doesn't really give her a bad time about it. But she finds in herself, her confidence is low, and she feels like he must be looking at that beautiful woman who's not 100 pounds overweight, and she's fearing and judging all the time. She goes, how much should I expect my husband to just accept me if I'm not losing weight?
We also want to look at, how can I be my very best for my spouse? So let's look at that. And I say that without guilt or condemnation. I'm just saying, what can I do that make myself the very best? I may be feeling so insecure that I'm kind of defaulting, well, my husband's obviously going to like to look at other women because I'm 100 pounds overweight. And be careful about what seeds you're planting, by the way. Don't plant those seeds. And the other piece is, that's telling us more, you're really uncomfortable about yourself. Let's take care of you so you can feel good about you. Also, talk to your husband about it. How you're really feeling. Man, I'm 100 pounds overweight. I know it. And I don't feel good about it. Discuss it. Now, you know, he may say, oh, honey, it's no big deal. But I want you to still talk about it. And then I want you to have a plan for it. Make sure that you're not just saying weight is the only issue. What else is going on?
Okay.
Are you misusing food because, are there intimacy issues in the marriage already? What else is potentially going on?
This is all so important, and just what you said, the self-care, you know, as you're getting healed, there are pieces that we're pulling together and seeing it come out, that's God uses those conversations and those moments of, wow, I've got an issue with this, to change and to make it better. What if an affair has happened?
Okay. Let's say that it's happened, life has been shattered, and you feel maybe in the depths of despair. You feel like, I'll never trust again. And maybe you're wondering, what do I even do with this marriage? Well, one of the things is, we want to make decisions somewhat slowly. You can always make the decision, if you need to end the marriage. Is this an ongoing affair? Are there other intentions? And I'm a counselor, so I'm going to vote for finding somebody that can really be of support to you and hopefully your spouse. And let's make a decision together. Now, you're going to need some help because this has been a lot of betrayal. So whatever your decision is, you're going to need some help dealing with that. It's traumatizing. We want to be careful that it doesn't affect your ability to trust in the future. You know, if you're not in this relationship, how's this going to affect your future and future relationships? We do come to a place, it's not a fast place to get to, but there's a place of forgiveness.
Do you have stories of that, like where there was a marriage and maybe you helped with that and you watched them go through it and where they came out, and they came out well? Because I think that's the hard part, is when you're in the middle of it, you think this is never going to be okay, never going to be fixed. Do you have a story of hope?
Yes. A situation immediately came to my mind of a couple. They were separated for a period of time, and it was a physical separation, not a legal separation, though it was probably going to head that way. And there was a period where both people made an agreement not to be in relationship with anybody else. So this was a cooling off time. And they were not living together. And for a period of time, they both agreed to get some individualized help. Probably 5 or 6 months, they're working on personal issues. And then they made a decision to come together in some marital counseling. So there's dealing with not only the affair and the betrayal, but there's dealing with, where do we go from here? Do we come back together? It's probably another 6 months. So it was at least a year before making any permanent decision. Ultimately, they redid their vows and they created really a fresh start, and both agreed to ongoing accountability, and they put together a plan so this would never, ever happen again. Each person said individually they understood they needed to work on some things in their life.
And that's interesting too, when you can have something really hard happen to you and through it, God is able to pull out the things that he wants to change in you. He uses that to make us stronger and better.
Yes. They had a group of people that were praying for them through this whole period. Covered by prayer. It's prayer driven. And you can come out the other side, irregardless of what happens in a relationship, not only stronger, but with a new sense of purpose. God's hand is upon you. And we want to keep you protected, really, by his spirit and his power. Know that there's a way out.
Heard you were up all night, thinking about how your world ain't right, and you were- to get better. And you're asking, why is it always raining on you? When all you want is just a little good news. Instead of standing there stuck out in the weather.
Culture is almost normalized infidelity, and divorce for that matter. But this was never God's intent for marriage. The consequences of cheating are devastating. If you've ever suffered because of an affair, or if you think your spouse is on the verge of starting one, there is hope. I'm Dr. Greg Jantz, and my book, Too Close to the Flame, is a resource that will provide key insights and information and some new strategies to help avoid these unhealthy, sexualized relationships. I've also talked before about The Center, a place of hope. It's where we focus on the whole person approach. If you or a loved one has been crushed by infidelity, emotionally, physically, you can learn to have a new life and trust again. Our number at The Center is one to make note of. It's 888-771-5166. Again, The Center, A Place of Hope, 888-771-5166. I would like to personally thank you for listening to Life, Love, and Family. My friend and colleague, Dr. Tim Clinton, started this program to encourage families and to equip marriages to stay strong. And we can do that in today's culture. For more resources and to share what you've heard today, visit our website, lifeloveandfamily.net. Your marriage matters not only to you, but also to God. As it says in Proverbs 11:3, the integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity.
Life, Love, and Family.
Dan was so depressed, all he could do was lay in bed. He tried all different kinds of therapy, programs, medications. Nothing worked. But his wife says as soon as she saw the website, aplaceofhope.com, she knew that that was going to be the key to her husband's healing. And it was. Aplaceofhope.com. They don't just treat depression. They treat the whole person. If you've tried everything and you or someone you love needs help with depression, call 888-771-5166 or find out more. Aplaceofhope.com.